continuing the reflection on conditionality. We've been exploring the conditions that support the direction of happiness and freedom, support the direction of letting go of struggle, of suffering, of stress. A very interesting aspect of the teaching that the Buddha points to, the very same process of conditioning that tends to create suffering, tends to have us get caught in greed, aversion, delusion, the same underlying patterns that condition us in the direction of suffering. Those very same underlying patterns, when we orient with different understanding, will take us in the direction of letting go of suffering, freedom. This teaching, just to review slightly, the teaching that we're talking about these past few weeks, begins with suffering and meeting suffering with wisdom, with when we are experience suffering and at the same time kind of meet a teaching that points a direction, a new direction, a possibility of something different. Sometimes we are at the place where we can actually hear that. Not always. And certainly for me, I heard the teachings of the Buddha 15 years before they actually landed. And yeah, I mean, it's like they didn't hit me at the right place at the right time the first time I heard those teachings. And I think the real difference for me in terms of why they landed when I met them 15 years later was because I had really experienced a lot of suffering. And there was a movement, a kind of the classic question that's pointed to, does anybody know a way or two out of this? That's kind of where I was. And those teachings arrived in that place where I was looking, I was searching for something. And so when it's not always suffering, you know, suffering will not always lead us towards in the direction of freedom. Sometimes it takes us back around in this cycle to engaging with that suffering the ways that we have habitually engaged with it, with our patterns of aversion, our patterns of greed, of confusion. Sometimes at certain points we might hear something different, and that might strike us with some possibility, leading us to the sense of engagement. And this particular teaching is one of engagement. It's not simply a teaching that says, believe me. It says, hear this and try it. So there's a kind of engagement that follows. With this particular teaching, it's connected with engaging. And so with that engagement, there's the stepping onto taking action. And from that stepping on and taking action, bringing some of the teachings of bringing awareness to our experience, cultivating the wholesome, noticing how the unwholesome affects us. When we explore this in our experience, this begins a natural process of moving in the direction of understanding. And basically what we understand is how our minds have habitually kind of been confused and habitually used the patterns of greed and aversion and gotten caught by those. We also begin to see with the teachings, the practices that are proposed in the Buddhist teachings, that directly we experience that those habits and patterns of greed and aversion create suffering here and now, create stress here and now. are not experienced as well-being here and now. And that experience, that understanding, is kind of news for us as we begin to recognize that the habits, the ways our mind has habitually engaged are creating suffering for us. Our mind tends to want to move in another direction. It begins to find the way to move in another direction in a very natural unfolding. And that's the unfolding of this path. The natural conditions that support the movement from suffering to freedom. And so with faith, there is the engagement, and following that, there's the kind of the beginning of movement towards there's the kind of delight of the possibility and the delight of the engagement of seeing that there's something different, seeing a different direction, a different approach. And the that delight then moves us in the direction of further practice, further engagement, further connection with the teachings, which begins to take us in the direction of concentration, essentially. We begin to understand the things that are in the way of suffering, the things that are in, I'm sorry, that are in the way of freedom from suffering, the things that are contributing to suffering. We begin to understand those, and the mind seeing those habits and patterns, and one framing of those habits and patterns are the hindrances. We see those as in the way of our well-being. And so the mind begins to explore what it means to let them go, begins to explore teachings that support a letting go of those hindrances. So this is the direction, actually, of concentration. The clearest definition of concentration in the suttas is the mind that is free from the hindrances, free from sense desire, free from ill will, free from sloth and torpor, free from restlessness and worry, and free from doubt. When the mind is free from those, it's in a state of presence and engagement with the present moment, sometimes with a particular experience like the breath. Often we think of that with concentration. We think of concentration as being focused on one thing. But there's also the concentration of a stable mind, the concentration where the hindrances aren't arising, but it's not stability of the experience. It's that there isn't reactivity to what's happening in experience. And so this is another form of concentration. Sometimes it's called moment-to-moment concentration. It's the mind that is not reactive, so the hindrances aren't pulling us into reactivity. The awareness is stable moment to moment. There's a continuity of awareness moment to moment. And in that place, with that continuity of awareness, the hindrances not arising, that is another form of concentration. And so the path through the these natural unfolding conditions, faith, suffering, when met with a teaching, will lead to faith or confidence that there's a direction, a possibility that will lead to engagement, which supports kind of a delight that there's a possibility, and the delight also that begins with the engagement of engaging in wholesome ethical conduct, in practicing generosity, engaging with the teachings in a way, begins to help the mind to find its way to tastes of something different, a different kind of way to live, a different way to be. And that creates a delight that then is followed by even a deeper delight, a joy, tranquility and happiness. These three, the last three we talked about last time, joy, tranquility, and happiness, are really the kind of, we could call them some of the qualities of the mind that are that are in a concentrated mind. They can all be there together. And in fact, this place in this teaching, the next step following joy, tranquility, and happiness, the next unfolding natural consequence is concentration. So this is an interesting teaching, actually, I think. Happiness is said to be the supportive condition for concentration. And this is a deeper concentration. And this is not an ordinary kind of happiness that we're talking about either. This is a happiness of the letting go of the hindrances. It's not the happiness of having something, or ordinary kind of having something. It really is the happiness of letting go. And so it's a subtle flavor, this happiness. It's got maybe a flavor of contentment, of ease, of well-being. It's subtler than joy. Joy's got a more kind of energetic quality to it. Happiness, a more tranquil quality to it. And so between joy and happiness is this tranquility, which is, I think, the turning from joy to happiness. Now, these qualities, all of these qualities, can be present in concentration at the same time. So it's not that joy goes away and tranquility arises, and then tranquility goes away and happiness arises. It's more, I think, it's more that it's like, what lens are we looking through, or where are we on the path effectively? That's another way to look at it. The first few times we really taste what it's like to have the hindrances not happening for us, it's quite amazing. It's like, wow, this is different. And there's a lot of joy, the joy of experiencing the mind that is not all tied up in knots. The letting go of that, it's quite joyful. And so the first meeting, the first kind of, as we are beginning the exploration of meeting these the disappearance of the hindrances, the first kind of flavor of the experience will be that joy and the energy there, kind of a very energetic experience. But the more we get familiar with it, the more we get familiar with the experience, the more we feel that quality of the joy, not that the joy necessarily goes away, but it mutates a little bit. It begins to be infused with some tranquility, and we begin to have the flavor or the taste of the kind of the sweetness of the letting go of the hindrances, the quality of mind. So for me, the quality of happiness, that contentment or that sweetness, it's kind of like the way my mind phrased it was, yes. It was just like a yes state. The mind was very settled, very stable, and just landing in a place that was so delightful. It didn't have that energy. It was very sweet, very still. And so it had that quality of tranquility. So the traditional way, I wanted to elaborate a little bit on the happiness today because it is such a I think it really bears repeating that happiness is so firmly on this path of freedom. Sometimes when we're, especially with the mindfulness practice, while we're attending to experience and often noticing struggle or suffering or stress, it is possible actually to be having stability of mind while noticing some kind of reactivity in the mind. And so there's a possibility that there can be a flavor of this happiness of just like, recognizing even just the recognition, oh, that's what's happening in the mind right now. We can even experience this happiness while doing mindfulness practice. We can experience this kind of happiness while a hindrance is arising in the mind, seen with wisdom. So for instance, seeing ill will, seeing anger arise in the mind, but knowing it, oh, that's what it's like to have anger in the mind. Then in that experience, that anger is no longer functioning as anger. It's no longer a hindrance. It is being met with that mindfulness. And so the mind isn't being pulled out or pulled around by that anger. It's able to see it. So the mind is stable there. At times, we may still be kind of tasting the flavor of the difficulty, the unpleasantness, or the how that anger is affecting the body and mind. That may be what we're noticing, but there also might be the possibility. And the more I practice, the more I see the possibility of noticing what it's like to be aware of that anger. What is that mind like? What is that experience like to know? Oh, this is what it's like to be a human being experiencing anger, and knowing that it's not tumbling on, that the anger doesn't have the upper hand. It's a shift of experience that we have when we're seeing a hindrance with that kind of stability of mind. And sometimes we can be curious about what is it like to be aware of that. And in that place, you may feel that happiness. Kind of just like, oh, it's like, wow, that's so cool. Look at how that's working. So there can be that kind of flavor of happiness through the practice. It's more commonly talked about in this particular teaching. It's more commonly talked about as the happiness of concentration, the kind of focused concentration. But that kind of what I was talking about there with being aware of the hindrance arising, having that stability of mind, the awareness being stable, that is also a form of concentration. And so that mind that is able to know what's happening, whether it's a simple body sensation, a sound, a sight, pressure or heat or coolness in the body, or whether it's a mind state arising, could be any mind state. It might be happiness, it might be confusion, it might be frustration. The mind able to be stable with that has these qualities of delight, of joy, of tranquility, of happiness in that concentration too. So the happiness of practice, when the mindfulness begins to stabilize, when it's established, when it's more continuous, we can also taste these qualities right there in mindfulness practice. We don't have to do the focused concentration practice to taste these qualities, to see this path unfolding, to see these qualities coming up. Sometimes the happiness can be a little more subtle. I'd say, you know, I'm kind of going through these, and maybe in the way I experienced them in my practice, there was a kind of curious experience at times of seeing the anger or the self-hatred, and having the mind be just perfectly content while that was happening. Kind of that was kind of like, wow, that's possible. That is possible to have the mind have that contentment while looking at something so challenging. Another subtler flavor of the happiness might come as we begin to notice what it's like to not be suffering. In that first case, you know, talking about, it's like the mind was seeing suffering and aware of how to be with it so that it wasn't affecting the mind in the same way. But there's other experiences of, you know, just like when there's nothing wrong. Sometimes we just don't notice when there's nothing wrong. An example of how we might feel this is, or a kind of a mental experiment of this. Like, imagine you broke your leg. You've got a big cast on your leg. You know, imagine what it's like to get up, get out of bed, and like get yourself into the kitchen to make breakfast for yourself, having this big cast on your leg, and, you know, maybe having crutches to help you navigate around. You know, that's going to be a struggle. That's going to be a struggle. And then imagine, in a split second, imagine the cast is gone, the leg is healed, and you can walk with ease. Isn't there a kind of like happiness there of just like the delight of not having that burden anymore? We don't have that burden a lot, but we don't notice that we don't have that burden. So sometimes we can touch into, essentially, when there's no problem, when there's just kind of like okayness. I found it really interesting to check into this kind of possibility at odd times of the day, you know, like transition moments, actually, when I've finished a meal before I'm getting up to do the next thing, or when I'm sitting at a stoplight, if I'm not rushed to get somewhere, you know, just, it's like there's nothing to do right now. Is there a problem? Not if I'm not anxious about getting somewhere. It's just like, so there's all kinds of times through the day where we can check into this experience. It's subtle at times, the experience of the happiness of no problem. It's kind of the happiness of not having anything either, pulling us into wanting something or pulling us into wanting to get rid of something. It's just things are okay in this moment. There's a kind of contentment. And then there's the happiness that can come with understanding, with insight, as we practice and begin to see. We might see the release from a particular kind of craving. We might understand how a pattern is put together in my own practice around looking at self-hatred, seeing how essentially the moment of insight, a moment of insight around that pattern, was seeing that the mind was picking up a thought and believing it, picking up a thought about this is a problem, this the way this mind engages with the world is a problem. picking that up and believing that thought and seeing that it was just a belief, that there was nothing inherently true about it. Seeing that really brought a moment of very deep bliss. And then there was a kind of a moment of kind of like believing that the bliss was going to be permanent. And that was like, oh, wow, that's going to be suffering. That's going to lead me into stress. And the mind let go of that idea. And then there was just a very sweet, smooth, like, self-hatred is not arising. The bliss kind of, it was kind of like the bliss was a joy. And then the tranquility of not holding on to that bliss came. And it was just, there's an understanding of how that pattern of self-hatred was created, and the mind isn't picking it up right now. And the just very deep happiness of the mind not picking it up. So insight into how our minds do things, into how it creates suffering, and seeing those kinds of understandings, that also can create, can be the cause or the condition that supports this happiness. So I just wanted to speak a little bit about this, partly to encourage a little bit of curiosity about what's going on in the mind while you're engaged in practicing. Because it's not always hard. It's not always a problem. Even when we're looking at something that's challenging, when there is that kind of, if there's even a little bit of a sense of space while you're looking at something difficult, in that place where there's the space, that's a good time to kind of land there. Oh, there's some ease here. Maybe there's a quality of happiness, or maybe it's just the feeling of tranquility. Letting yourself take that in. A condition that supports the nourishment of these wholesome states is the recognition of them, the noticing of them, mindfulness of them supports their development. That's another reason why this is a very natural unfolding. If we turn our attention to what's going on in the practice, if we turn our attention, direct our attention to noticing, how is the mind while it's practicing? Very naturally, it will be encouraging those qualities that support that stability of mind, that concentration, that ability to be present with each moment.